Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camilla. I hope you're having a wonderful Sunday afternoon. I know I am. I hope you've had a great weekend and everything is going well. And I hope you now have time to sit back, relax, and enjoy my show. It's going to be a very interesting, informative show, as I think it's always an informative show, but even more especially today, I have a wonderful topic and a wonderful guest who's going to be joining me in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking today about multi-partner or multi-family relationships, better known as polyamory. And I can't say I really know a lot about it, or I think I do, but I'd rather not, you know, get into this specifics of it. I don't think I'm the best at explaining it, but I think my guest is very well educated and informed on this matter, and she's just going to give us a very good education today, a great learning session on exactly what polyamory is. Okay, so without further ado, I would like to welcome Dr. Elizabeth Sheriff today to Get Deep and Keep It Real. And that's right, Get Deep and Keep It Real. You can call in, and the number is area code 347-826-9733. That's 347-826-9733. If you would like to call in to ask questions or make a comment, please feel free to do so. Also, remember, you can reach out to us on Facebook, and that is Get Deep and Keep It Real on Facebook.com. Or if you would like to send an email, it's Get Deep, Keep It Real, all one word, or one phrase, rather, at gmail.com. So without further ado, let's get our show started today. Hi, Dr. Sheriff. This is Tiffany Camilla. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm so happy you could join me today and my listeners. So I would like to, first of all, once again, thank you for joining our show. And I would, first of all, like for you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and, of course, your book and your research study, which I was so excited to see and just kind of know about, because I, being a student in marriage and family counseling, I thought it was quite interesting, and I always like to see interesting research being done in the field of relationships and families.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I have been studying polyamorous families for 15 years, first as a graduate student like yourself, in a sociology program, and then later as a professor, and now as an independent scholar. I'm coming out with a book about these findings called The Polyamorists Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families. And I'm really excited about it. It's the first book I've written, and I thought it was going to be a lot harder to write, but maybe because the material itself is so interesting to me, and I've been doing this for so long, I feel like I just had so much to say, the book just flowed out. The hard thing was cutting it down. Like, there's so much else I would have liked to have put in the book that just I didn't have space for. So it was, I think about it, it was definitely much easier than giving birth to either of my children. Giving birth to the book went much more smoothly.
For my listeners who may not be familiar with the term, can you just give us a basic, you know, overview of exactly what polyamorous or polyamory is?
Polyamory is the practice of openly conducted multiple partner relationships. So it's kind of like swinging, only not exactly, because swinging tends to emphasize sexual variety, but not emotional connection. In fact, among some swingers, they have rules that you shouldn't get emotionally connected to one of your swinging partners, that you can be emotionally connected to your spouse or something, but don't get involved with other people. It's okay to have sex, just don't get involved. For the polyamorists, it's okay to have sex with other people, but the goal is ultimately to get involved. You know, it's the emotional component of the relationship that has such a big draw for the polys, and not so much the sex. Although the sex is fun, I'm not saying they're not psyched for the sex, but they end up, in fact, talking so much and having so much negotiation and working through things together that they often have less sex than they had anticipated.
Wow. Interesting. So
it's,
totally
it's also not...
That.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so it's more about that intimate emotional connection.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And an intimate emotional connection and sexual connection for men and women. Polyamory differs from polygamy in that, polygamy means...
Thank you.
Yes, sure. Polygamy means multiple marriage. So not everybody in polyamorous relationships is married, for one thing. But more importantly... Polygamy is usually practiced as polygyny, or one man with multiple wives. Polyamory, on the other hand, allows both men and women to have additional partners. So that's a pretty significant difference.
Yes, it is.
Polygyny.
All right. So equality.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. How does it define more men or women who practice it? Is it about equal when it comes into cultural and racial mixtures? Do you find it's predominant with one particular culture or race? How's that working out, or what are you seeing in your research?
The research shows, first I'll go for the gender question, then the race question.
Okay.
The research shows that the gender mix is pretty even between men and women, but women kind of have the upper hand a little bit in many of the mainstream poly communities because lots of people are looking for bisexual women. And not as many people are looking for bisexual men. So women are the more highly sought after partners in many cases, not in every case.
Right.
But so that kind of gives women, especially bisexual women, the upper hand a little bit. As far as racially and ethnically, very white scene, hardly any people of color. And I found that not only in my own research, that it was hard to get a more diverse sample. I started in the Midwest, and I was like, oh, maybe so many white people, just because it's the Midwest, I'm going to go to the Bay Area, where there's a ton of poly people and a ton of people of color, and not many people of color, but diversity among people of color. So, you know, like black middle class and Asian people that you're not going to find elsewhere in, certainly didn't find in the Midwest. So I ended up finding the same people, the same of white, highly educated, middle and upper middle class people practicing polyamory. And I asked around quite a bit. The white people were just mystified. Why don't more people of color practice? We just don't know. We feel it welcoming, but they just don't come. The people of color who were in the setting said a couple different things.
Okay.
One is that they didn't want to be fetishized or kind of seen as a novelty. Like, mm-hmm. oh, there's the Asian girl. Have you had sex
right.
with the Asian girl yet? You know, something mm-hmm. like that. They were like, I don't want to be the only one and stand out that way. Especially when people of color are already hypersexualized
right.
in American culture, to then kind of be the only one in the setting, they were just like, no, that just sounds uncomfortable. I heard from some African-American people that they felt like it was specifically racialized as white in a nasty, kind of dirty way.
Hmm.
Like, self-respecting black people wouldn't do that. It was gross. And, you know, it just wasn't proper. It was just disgusting. And so a self-respecting black person just wouldn't do that, would know better. And that seemed kind of to be class-related, possibly, like middle and upper middle class. Black people kind of look down on it as gross. And I'm hesitant to make that statement across the board because my sample
right.
wasn't big enough to make clear statements of, you know, all black people think this, but the people in the study did say mm-hmm. that their families would think it was gross and would be like, how
right.
are you doing that? That's
but
a nasty
that's
white person thing
right
to do.
There, their families would think. And I just wanted to add in that in my own, like, research of relationships and stuff, I also found that in, especially in the African-American community, it's something that's almost, like, just as taboo as being lesbian or gay. It's like this hidden dark secret to be open sexually almost, you know. Sometimes for me it's a little confusing because you will see somewhat, and I don't really want to stereotype, but sometimes you might see, you know, people who are married who are maybe stepping out or whatever, but then when you try to have the discussion of, you know, swinging or alternative relationships, people tend to, like, maybe shut down or shut you down because they're kind of worried about what others may think. So I think that there is some truth to that as far as I think maybe they may be interested, but they're so worried about what the interfamily and that fear of rejection will bring.
I think that's
to them.
A big thing. And I think it's not just family, but external society as
that's
well.
Right. Yeah.
That if you're already dealing with racism or the kind of surveillance that comes with poverty, you
right.
know, if you're poor and living in subsidized housing, for instance, then they check on how many people you have living with you. They're all up your nose about
that's
whether
right.
you can have someone over or not. So it's
that's,
just not safe.
Wow, you made an excellent point there. You know, it just involves so many different, you know, layers, you know, the economic. Wow, excellent. Yes. Yeah, I never even thought about that particular part of it, that it is a, you know, socioeconomic thing as well. Not just we don't
absolutely.
Have the freedom of just being ourselves, you know, like another
right.
Group may have. Wow. Interesting. Really
and
interesting.
More fear of being fired. You know,
right.
a lot of the people, the people in the sample, my research sample, were IT professionals or doctors
right.
or academicians.
Mm-hmm.
Almost half of them had PhDs.
Right.
So it's a pretty select group. If you're working as a manager for Chick-fil-A, you're pretty psyched. You know, you've got a decent job, but if they find out you're polyamorous, Chick-fil-A is going
right.
to fire you. And there's
exactly.
nothing you can do about it. It's legal
right.
to be fired for being polyamorous, and somebody could take your kids. So yeah. It's dangerous enough that without social privileges, it's
right.
more out of reach
right.
to be
right.
so open about it. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people of color having multiple partner relationships.
Right.
I'm saying they don't appear in the mainstream polyamorous community.
Exactly.
I do talk to people who say, I know men, especially a double standard, it appears, among African American and Latino men,
mm-hmm.
and I don't possibly Asian men, I'm not totally sure, I don't have enough data on that, but two separate people have right. mentioned feeling like African American men have more of a pass to
mm-hmm.
see multiple people and
right.
their statistical rarity. I mean, the war on drugs has decimated
right.
the African American population, male population. So many are in prison that African American women, if they want to date African American men, are having a harder time finding partners. So that ends up being pretty complicated as to who calls themselves polyamorous and who actually does it and how open it ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
And not just African Americans. I'm using that as an example because that respondent did, but it's certainly happening among other white people and other races and ethnicities as well.
Right. And I wanted to go back to the whole class issue as well. I think I would agree with you in just saying that I feel from what I've, you know, experienced or researched that people in the higher echelon realms do tend to be, seem to be more free to explore and to do things because they don't, they may have to worry about, you know, if they're a doctor or lawyer, they're professional, but it doesn't, they don't really have to fear of losing their job. I mean, just look at politicians. I mean, really, you know, yeah, that's a whole different story, different show.
Right.
There, but,
Anthony Weiner is getting away with some crazy stuff right now that
right.
Obama can't even say Trayvon Martin could have been me. Imagine
exactly.
if Obama was texting pictures of his penis.
Right.
You know,
and
people's
no
heads
sense.
Would explode. Like, he can't even
right.
acknowledge the obvious fact that if he had a son, the son would look like him.
Right, right. But even just, like, kind of even not even taking it into a racial thing, I just feel like the higher in education you get and income or profession, you seem to have more of a freedom to be sexually, more sexually open.
Absolutely.
And experimental.
That's
so,
something I call the privilege of perversities. And I wrote an article on that, looking actually at, co-authored with my good friend Corey Hammers,
okay.
looking at not only polyamory, but studies
yeah.
of kinky people or people who
right.
do BDSM and found
right.
that across the board in the U.S. and abroad and
mm-hmm.
across time, it was
wow.
very consistently homogenous, white, educated, middle and upper middle class people was just the resounding drumbeat. Those are the people who have access to being openly sexually diverse.
Right. And that's what I want to stress here. We're talking about being open about it. We both know that it's going on at various income levels and, you know, race, whatever, across the board. But it's more of, it seems like the lower income you get, the less and less it's talked about or discussed, you know, in public or even within the relationship.
And maybe you're too tired. If you're working
yeah.
two jobs already or raising kids by yourself? Do you have time to date one person, much less three?
That's very true.
You know, or do you just come home and take a shower and go to bed? You're choosing between sleeping and eating at that point.
That is very true. And so speaking of which, going from there, there are two articles on your website, and that is Elizabeth, I'm sorry, am I pronouncing your last name correctly? Is it Chef?
Chef, like cook,
chef,
the kind
okay.
of person who cooks? Chef, only spelled differently, S-H-E-F-F.
Yeah, right. Okay, thank you, Elizabeth Chef. So she has a website, and that is ElisabethSheff.com. And
yes.
You can find some of her posts. And you just have some great articles here. And one of them that I wanted to bring up was the one from June 20th about the three policies that could support human rights and gender and sexual minority families. I thought that was a great article, and I just wanted to discuss it a little bit.
Great,
I mean,
thank
some
you.
Of
I'm glad you read it.
Already kind of talked about it. We kind of talked about it, but I just thought you just had some very interesting points bridging family rights or human rights. I love that. I really love
thank
that.
You. You know, I think one of the most important things about that is expanding the legal definition of parent to really fit
mm-hmm.
what's happening. Parent has never been as narrowly defined as it is
right.
legally. You know, people have taken in other people's kids forever. That's not
right.
a new thing. But having the status of the child dependent on the status of the parent is a new thing. Having such a complex bureaucracy that we need all sorts of ways to determine who gets what, and using parental status to determine who gets what when it comes to kids. I'm saying a couple different things. Just use the kid's status to determine what the kid needs. What does it matter
mm-hmm.
whether, you know, mom is having sex with someone or not? That's pretty much irrelevant to, does the child need glasses? The two are not
right.
at all connected. Let's disconnect
right.
them. Secondly, let's expand legal parenthood to better fit what families really are today. So
right.
many children have more than two parents. The lucky ones have more than two parents, you know? It's clearly more adults are good in a child's life. So let's have legal recognition of that so these parents can support these children.
Right. And so how does that play into polyamorous families? And how many polyamorous families are out there with children? I don't know if you have numbers, but, you know, why should we care?
You know, I don't have numbers. It's hard to count. Partially because
right.
of what we were talking about before, like who's doing multiple
yeah.
partner relationships versus who identifies as such, and that lots of people are closeted, it can be too dangerous to come out. So it's really hard to tell.
Right.
I have looked at all sorts of website estimates, and the range I have seen online is from 1.8 to 9.2 million people
wow.
in the United States practicing polyamory. So even at the largest end, it pales in comparison to swingers, and we don't know exactly how many of those there are, but certainly at least into the triple digit, yeah, more than polyamorists. Swinging
right.
is more. So in terms of poly families with children, they're so very difficult to say.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you they tend to cluster in
mm-hmm.
urban and suburban areas because that
right.
gives them more likelihood to find other polyamorous families like them. It gives them more privacy to just have their families and not have Aunt Mabel up their nose about who spent the night last night.
Right.
Let's see. I guess one of my most important findings is that the kids in these families seem to be doing great. And I think that's for a number of reasons. First, the race and class privileges that we talked about earlier. You know, if you're from a white middle class family that's three or more earners, you know, you're born on third base. So it's easy to be doing good there.
Right.
But second, these kids have a ton of attention. Loving attention from all sorts of people, not only their parents' lovers, but other polyamorous community members. Like, they've got strong support networks, not only available in their families, but they see their parents establishing important relationships that aren't necessarily husband and wife or don't necessarily look like other relationships. And the kids are like, oh, we can design our own family so they establish important relationships with other kids in the poly scene or other adults that they have ongoing relationships with. You know, they feel like they can form their own families in a way because they see their parents doing that. So they're like, oh, family is something that you can do, and I'm going to create this family for myself. So they end up with a lot of support. You had also said, you know, why should other people care? Because really, polyamory is not for everyone. It can be complicated and tiring for some people. It's just not comfortable, you know. Like, really, polyamory is only for the minority of people.
Right.
But monogamous people, or especially people in serial monogamy relationships, where you're monogamous with one person and then you break up, and then you establish another relationship, and you're monogamous with that person. And that's what we mostly have now.
Right.
But because we're doing that, we have kids with multiple parents, lots and lots of kids whose parents have broken up and then repartnered with someone else. And those families, which are far more common, could actually learn a lot from polyamorous families about how to communicate about uncomfortable things, or how to balance multiple parents' differing opinions when it comes to what to do about the children.
Right.
Things like that. Polyamory has, people in polyamorous relationships work hard to develop these relationship skills.
Right.
Because their relationships are so by design. You know, there isn't a lot of, there aren't a lot of examples out there for polyamorous relationships.
Right.
So they have to talk about it and think about it.
Right. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted people to understand that, you know, it's just not people going out there, you know, jumping into these relationships, and they tend to last longer, I think. Or did you find that in your research?
You know, I found that they can be very durable, yes, but they don't necessarily last in exactly the same form, meaning that they may change over time. People who were lovers end up not being lovers anymore, things like that. But it doesn't mean that it's over or that you never see that person again. You still have an ongoing co-parenting interaction with that person or something like that. So this kind of more expanded view of relationships includes not only being able to have sexual relationships with multiple people, but ironically, de-emphasizing sex, too. So the emotional aspect, which outlasts the sexual aspect, can still be a real relationship.
Right. Wow. Well, unfortunately, our time is about up. This has been a great half hour. I wish I had more time, but I definitely would like to have you back on my show again. I don't know what we would talk about, but I think we could find so many things to talk about. There's so many things that I think we as a society here, especially in the United States, need to be informed about when it comes to our sexuality to help us not necessarily get in touch with our own selves, but just to be more understanding of everyone else as well, to kind of, you know, bridge us together to make us understand that we're not so different. We really want the same things. We just may go about it in a different manner.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Yes. So before we go, I would like for you to let us know if my listeners would like to contact you or, you know, find your book, your website. So just take about 20 seconds, 30 seconds to give us that information.
Okay. Once again, the title of the book is The Polyamorists Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families. And you can find more information about me on my website at ElisabethSheff.com. That's Elisabeth with an S.
All right, and I'll make sure I'll try to put some links up on my website for you so that people can reach you. And once again,
right.
And please, you know, check her out. Check out her website. She has a lot of interesting points of view, not all that we got to cover, but we did get a lot of things covered today, and I'm just really excited, and this was just great. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're listening.
Thank
to
you,
me.
And
if
you can email me at dr.elisabeth.sheff@gmail.com.
Okay, one more time.
dr.elisabeth.sheff@gmail.com.
Okay, wonderful. You're listening.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You've been listening to Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camella on Blog Talk Radio. That's Get Deep and Keep It Real on Blog Talk Radio. I can also be found at Get Deep and Keep It Real on Facebook.com and also Get Deep and Keep It Real at gmail.com. If you want to email me, but it's best to hit me up on Facebook. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I hope you've learned something or, you know, just found an interesting conversation. Have a great Sunday, and I hope to hear from you soon, and stay tuned next week. Show title to be announcing. Have a great day. Bye-bye.